keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show, once again with your host Nick Burnaby here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm really happy to be back. So many crazy things going on, some of them frightening as hell, some of them scary, some of them encouraging. I mean, there's a lot of just really deep, complex situations playing out right now, probably the biggest of which here domestically in the United States is what's going on in Standing Rock, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight on the show. But other than that, also in foreign policy, it's being overlooked right now because, of course, the transition between the presidential candidates and all that stuff going on. The situation in Aleppo should not be overlooked. Looks very much like Russia is, the Russian-backed Syrian government is gaining the upper hand there. I mean, they're successfully dividing the parts of Aleppo that are being held by the rebels. And, you know, so these groups are being isolated. It's not looking good for the U.S.-backed rebels. And, you know, plenty of different thoughts on those, you know, those fighters over there. Of course, some of them are part of an organic anti-government movement. Other factions of them are Saudi-backed Wahhabists. Other factions are CIA-backed. Other factions still are Pentagon-backed. And, you know, that news was kind of played a couple months ago that, you know, CIA and Pentagon-backed rebels were actually fighting each other. Very complicated situation going on over there. A bunch of geopolitical headwinds. The players who have a lot to gain from either side winning over there would be Russia, and on the other side you've got the Sunni Arab states, which would be like Saudi Arabia and Qatar, United Arab Emirates. Also, the Iranians are heavily backing the Saudi government, or sorry, the Assad government. A lot of this has to do with the movement of fossil fuels, pipelines, competing kind of territory on who's going to build what pipeline and who's going to supply Europe. Right now, Russia is obviously sitting in a very strong position with its control of the fossil fuel supplies to Europe, and that's why they are so adamant about protecting the Syrian government. I've said it before on the show, and I'll say it again. Russia would risk World War III to keep the Syrian government in place. And that's why it's so important to know what the hell is really going on over there. And that's why we came out so strongly against the idea of a no-fly zone, which was being, you know, talked about by Hillary Clinton, but now the ball has gotten rolling within Congress to start talking about a no-fly zone. So this is something that we keep an eye on, because establishing a no-fly zone in Syria without it being in cooperation with Russia would be a recipe for just major, major disaster. Right now I want to bring an awesome journalist on, Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire? How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing really well myself. I know, I don't know if it was your article. I don't think it was, but I know you guys over at Free Thought Project recently covered this congressional assessment of a no-fly zone. I mean, what do you make of this? And this is definitely, I think, a story that's just not being talked about right now, just because of all the other stuff going on with the election and all that stuff. You know, what do you think is going on right now in Syria with the, you know, all signs are pointing to the Syrian government gaining the upper hand? I mean, they could be just maybe weeks or maybe months away from taking the entirety of Aleppo. And, you know, that's kind of like the Stalingrad of this kind of proxy war between, you know, the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc. You know, what do you see happening over there, Claire?
I have to say that a no-fly zone is almost always not a good sign. When you establish a no-fly zone, somebody takes advantage of it. Somebody has either permission or opportunes the chance to use it as a fly zone. And as Hillary even said, I think it was in an email, I've lost track now at this point, a no-fly zone would kill a lot of Syrians. I mean, when you establish a no-fly zone, it's like all hell breaks loose. And we don't really have much business. The U.S. government does not have much business being in Syria in the first place. It's all about resources, et cetera. It's a geopolitical wrangling. And to have a no-fly zone and to have Syria take the upper hand, it would be perhaps best for the U.S. just to back out. We're again talking about this possibility of war with Russia by proxy. Russia already has in place the fleet with planes and the naval fleet and the submarines and everything else ready. You know, they're firing on Aleppo, they're firing on Syria. I see this spiraling out of control if the U.S. is not careful. And, you know, we're in a lame duck portion of the presidency, and it still seems to be as if we're pushing this empire crap relentlessly, and it's not going anywhere, and nothing good can possibly come of it. We have the backing of NATO, of course, but critics of our foreign policy would say that we are pushing this to the point of our own extinction, where the U.S. should really be backing out of this imperialist agenda worldwide and kind of looking and focusing on things at home. And instead, we're like still trying to dominate all of these foreign countries that are trying. We just have no business there. I mean, that's what it comes down to. If we provoke war with Russia at this point, if there is a world war that breaks out, it would literally be the U.S.'s fault.
Now, Claire, you're starting to sound a whole lot like a Kremlin secret. I just got to throw that out there because, you know, the Washington Post says that we're all working for the Russians now. Even though I've never been to Russia. I met a Russian guy once or twice when I was in Mexico last year, 2 years ago, actually. I know a few of my friends are probably like part Russian. A lot of people are probably part Russian, part everything else in this country. But, you know, first of all, I want to come out strongly and say F you, Washington Post, because reporting that and basically saying anyone who disagrees with the neoliberal economic system and the neoconservative foreign policy system that the United States currently subscribes to under every president and every president we've had for, you know, ever since probably Reagan, you know, they're basically saying anybody who effectively dissents away from that establishment is working for the Russians either directly or indirectly as quote-unquote useful idiots. Now, I would actually make the argument that people that are advocating those very destructive policies, for instance, Hillary Clinton with the no-fly zone in Syria, those people are working against the United States because they're pursuing policies that are going to wind up getting a bunch of people killed. They're pushing policies that are going to instigate much more domestic terrorism. They're pushing policies that are going to make people around the world hate us. They're pushing policies that cost the United States a shitload of money. They're pushing policies that are forging, trying to hold an empire together that is clearly on the down and out. I mean, the you only have an empire for so long, you know what I mean? And so, you know, I would argue that the people that are not criticizing the status quo in this country, and God, who in the hell can sit here and tell us that everything is fine in the United States, everything is great? Who can sit here and say that without criticizing something? That's like 90% of the country is going to tell you, no, there's something wrong. So what, do 90% of the people in this country work for the Russians now? I mean, this is ridiculous, dude.
No, this is a thing, and this is crazy, because the Washington Post piece, okay, first of all, you know, they have called anti-media out by name before and criticized us for, like, you know, spurious journalism. And I just have to say that their piece on this Russian propaganda thing is virtually criminal. It is literally libelous, and it is slanderous, and it's deserving of a lawsuit, in my opinion, by every organization listed, you know, that they link to. They did not investigate at all. They did not name sources.
What do you
think?
They
did not.
Did you sue the Washington Post or what?
I'm sorry? Absolutely. There should be a cease and desist order. This is the most absurd piece of crap I've ever seen tried to be played off as journalism ever. I mean, you know, my journalistic training is not huge, but what I did receive in, like, the very first classes that I ever took was that you have to have integrity. You have to source what you're writing really well. You have to investigate. You have to, like, go to the links that you need to go to try to make sure that what you're reporting is truthful and it is the facts. And what the Post did was took a website that came into existence in August and did not even tweet anything or did not even post anything until, I think, earlier this month or in October or something. And they took it as steel truth and used it as if it were, you know, just absolute fact. There is nothing to back it up. They did not name the sources. They refused. I mean, they did nothing to back up what they said. The organization that they quoted, Prop or Not, as Glenn Greenwald pointed out on Twitter, Prop or Not tweeted out these posts that sounded as if they came from some, like, 14-year-old kid. And the Washington Post is saying these people are experts. And they're analysts in the field of, you know, like, military analysis and such. It's just the biggest joke.
They seem really good at propaganda, don't they? And
well, no, actually, they're really bad at propaganda, but they certainly try hard.
So here's the gist of it. For those of you that aren't familiar, because I know not a lot of people read the Washington Post, especially the people that listen to this show, they basically put out a report that basically has zero evidence, and it basically says that a lot of websites which are part of the independent media movement that routinely basically more or less have made an industry out of questioning the United States,
including award-winning outlets.
I mean, this also grouped in one of the guys that helped. Wasn't one of the guys from Consortium News that helped break the Whitewater scandal or something? I mean, just big time journalists all grouped in and thrown out.
Ron Paul and Chris Hedges, and I mean, it's insane. This list is literally, it includes incredibly well-known and established and legitimate outlets and people.
Yeah, and it includes us. And in the end, it's kind of like a backhanded compliment because the Washington Post thinks that we're threatening their hegemony on U.S. public opinion. Well, sorry to break it to you guys over at Washington Post. If you're listening tonight, or if you assholes at PropOrNot who have zero evidence to back up your claims, if you're listening tonight, you guys have lost. You lost your control. You lost your control over public opinion. Your monopoly over the conversation in the United States has landed us where we're at right now. The most divided we've ever been. The most violent, you know, suicides and the most violent cops and the biggest incarceration rate in the world and all these horrible, the war on drugs, the institutionalized racism, millions of people dead in the Middle East for nothing, basically. You guys got us here. Washington Post, New York Times, Fox News, CBS, ABC. Maybe ABC is the most hypocritical because I want to tell you this. First, let me get to that point I was trying to make about the whole point of the article from Washington Post was saying that fake news is being funded by Russian propagandists and it's being used to discredit trust in American institutions.
In American democracy.
quote unquote democracy. First of all, the original post, which came from the Washington Post, was a fake news story that was propaganda. So, I mean, sure, it was against the Russians, but it was American propaganda. Like, it was State Department type, you know, military-industrial complex propaganda. That's what it was. And it was a fake news story because it wasn't real. It wasn't backed up by evidence. I mean, sure, some of the people that were on that list, and there's 200 different websites, there's some of them that are complete shite, like yournewswire.com and some of the other ones that are listed. Those websites are literally fiction. They're fiction. Like, people can't decide between fact and fiction. That's their problem. They're too dumb to know. Fine. But to group everybody in that includes us and the Free Thought Project and Consortium News, antiwar.com, you know, Truth Out, you know, Truth Dig, all these other great websites that, you know, like I said, have made a cottage industry out of questioning the state of affairs here in the United States, to group all of them in, it was just sheer propaganda and it was just fake news. They just made fake, it was fake news. That's all it was.
They made fake news to prove that fake news exists.
Yeah.
It's like the biggest hypocritical irony I think that could possibly exist.
And so I want to look at two quick stories here, and keep in mind I want to get into the Dakota Access Pipeline stuff. First, I want to introduce our longtime co-host, DB Schwartz, coming in hot. What's up, man? You there?
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. Just got a little busy here at the end of the night. But, yeah, this stuff's surreal, man. It's like 84 is happening page by page here where they're blaming people for doing things they're doing. And now I'm pretty certain we do have like that triple super state scenario where China, Russia, and the U.S. can't really attack each other because they're so up there with their armaments that now we're stuck in this perpetual psyop, basically, and proxy war.
Like a perpetual proxy war. That's what's going on. I mean, that's exactly what's playing out in the Middle East, and that's what's been playing out in the Middle East since, you know, the 50s, basically, the 60s, the 70s. I mean, it's been happening. And, you know, for a time, it was also going on in Central America and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Cuba, for instance, as well. You know, this stuff is just proxy war after proxy war because these huge countries are too cowardice to fight each other. Thank God in some ways, because then we'd all be dead because there'd be a nuclear holocaust. But they're too cowardice to fight each other or to be honest about what they're doing or their intentions. And so they destroy little countries like Syria or Iraq or Cuba or Central America or Libya or wherever else these proxy wars are going on, Vietnam, Korea, where they've happened in the past. I mean, because they're so cowardly and dishonest, they fight proxy wars. And A bunch of people in third world countries or developing countries end up dying because of it, so that someone can make a profit and so that someone can maintain power. And it really sucks. And that's exactly what we've been trying to call attention to with the anti-media, with the Free Thought Project, with many of these other outlets. Look, if America was a perfect country, or if it was quote unquote great, do you think we'd even be in business? The anti-media wouldn't exist. There'd be no reason for us to be around. Everybody, I'd be reading the Washington Post right now because everything is great. You know, you guys have done a stellar job with your media. You've kept the government in check since day one. And, you know, there's no corruption. There's no empire. There's none of that. But they didn't. They failed. That's why people like us exist. That's why I'm here talking. That's why Claire and DB, that's why we're all together. That's why people are listening to our show, because they failed. They screwed us. They robbed us. They sent us off to die. They killed a bunch of other people in other countries. They demolished economies in Mexico. They demolished economies in the United States to make their buddies rich. And that's why we're here. We're not here because there's no need for us. We're here because there's a goddamn demand for the information we're putting out there, because it needs to be said. It needs to be heard. And they want to shut us up. I mean, Prop or Not is talking about having the FBI come look into us. The FBI can come look into me any day they want. All they're going to get is a big finger in their face when I open the front door, if I even open it up.
There are a couple big ironies here, though, too, because Prop or Not, who won't even reveal themselves because they're too chicken shit to do so, want to investigate all of these outlets for espionage, which carries some pretty hefty sentences, for one thing. And for another, like, after there was a huge backlash against this article, the mainstream media is actually reaching out to all of the outlets on this list, or at least some of them, and asking questions. Like, I've been questioned by a pretty well-known outlet, you know, like, tell us what this is about and stuff. It's, you know, they're kind of like, are you fake news? Like, to me, that rings of, what are we doing wrong that you're doing right, but we're going to try to make it seem like you're still doing it wrong anyway. I mean, this, it has created a backlash for a very good reason. Alternative media has done an absolutely stupendous job of covering corruption and where the government and the establishment has gone wrong. We've done a stellar job. Is a threat that we pose.
We ask the questions that either some people aren't allowed to ask, because believe me, the Washington Post is a total piece of shit. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not defending the Washington Post. It's owned by Jeff Bezos, who also owns Amazon. I mean, it's a big, giant conglomerate. Washington Post probably isn't even profitable, but the guy runs it because he's a mega billionaire, makes a lot of money in his other ventures. And let's face it, the most valuable thing in media is not your profitability, it's your influence. And the Washington Post, at least recently, was highly influential. I mean, they lost a lot of their power over this election, and that's why I think one of the reasons why they're so angry and upset and looking to lash out at people. But the reason why Jeff Bezos bought Washington Post when it was unprofitable, I mean, it was a sinking ship, and everyone was like, oh, why in the hell is he buying it? It doesn't make business sense. Well, it only makes business sense when you understand the true power of media, which is the power to influence people's opinions. And that's what any, you know, all these propagandists and big time mega rich people, they all understand that and they get that and they use it to their benefit. But I guess people in a pure business vacuum are like, that doesn't make smart business sense. Washington Post isn't profitable. Neither is New York Times or any of these other assholes. I mean, I think Fox News may be like the only broadcast media that's actually like profitable at this point. Don't ask me why. I can't stand Fox News either. But I mean, CNN, MSNBC, all of these guys don't really make any money. They just peddle influence. That's what they do now. And
there's one thing that's really worth noting that I keep seeing that I think this is the most pertinent point. The people who point the quote unquote loudest fingers, if you will, are the ones who harbor the most guilt. All of these mainstream outlets calling out alternative media for being fake are the ones peddling the fake bullshit. That's really what it comes down to. And they're hurt because it came back to roost. It came back in their face. They were discovered. They were exposed for not actually committing any acts of journalism whatsoever. And they're hurt. And they're hurting. And their subscribership and their readership is down enormously and they have nobody to blame but themselves, and they can't accept that. So they have to blame everybody else. So they come up with this fake Russian propaganda crap. Oh,
you're so right. And I was thinking the same exact thing. And it really reminds me, it kind of just reminds me of the DNC and the Democratic Party, too, where after Hillary Clinton lost and everybody's looking to say, well, oh, no, the reason she lost was because of Jill Stein. It was because of Bernie Sanders. It was because of fake news. It was because of this. It was racism. It was that. It was this, that, and the other thing. Sure, maybe those things played a slight role in what went on. But in the end, people despise Hillary Clinton. Why did you guys pick Hillary Clinton? Why did you guys screw over Bernie Sanders? Why did you not allow a fair primary? Why did you skew the media in favor of Hillary Clinton? Why did you feed her debate questions ahead of the debates? Why did you do everything in your power to elect maybe one of the most unlikable people in American political history? Why? You know, and it the only answer there is just corruption. I mean, there was just a lot of favors, and maybe Hillary Clinton was owed a lot of favors, and she called them in, and it was like, okay, guys, you owe me these favors. Now you make me president, and that's what happened. And they lost. And instead of saying, okay, you know what? We messed up big time. We shouldn't have done that. We should have went with Bernie Sanders. He would have won. The Democrats would have swept the Congress. I mean, it would have been a huge, whole different story right now. We would have been talking about a whole different thing. And instead, we're talking about, oh, fake news, Russian propaganda gave Donald Trump the election. Sorry, but I'm not buying it. And you know what? When they try to loop us in with that and say we're part of that problem, where's my rubles? I'm still waiting on my check, Putin. If you're listening out there, Assad, we've been accused of backing Assad or being financed by Assad as well. Where's my money? Why am I broadcasting out of a no-bedroom apartment in the barrio in Chula Vista, California right now? Why is this happening? Because where's my rubles? I want my Putin money. But
yeah, no kidding.
Honestly, I don't want that money. I don't give a shit about that money. I want to earn my money fairly, and we earn our money honestly by criticizing the U.S. government, which is actually very easy to criticize because they mess up a lot of things. A lot of things. I mean, oh, dude, we can talk for an hour about it, literally, because that's what we do every single night of the week. We talk for an hour about the things the U.S. government is messing up. Not rocket science here, people. Not Russian-funded propaganda. It's self-inflicted. Last point I want to make on this before we move on to Standing Rock, because that's the biggest story maybe of our lifetimes, and it's something that is happening right now. Before I move on, ABC News, which really stuck out to me, and actually 2 points I want to make quickly because the Free Thought Project covered something else today as well. I'm pulling it up right now because it's too funny. But anyway, the first thing is ABC News regurgitated this report that the Washington Post initially covered. Of course, the Associated Press covered it as well. The ABC copied the Associated Press version, which is very commonplace. The Associated Press is kind of like an organization that all these media outlets are a party in, and the Associated Press creates Newswire articles and everybody else copies it. So the Associated Press controls like the mainstream media narrative for the country and the world. And that's a whole other problem I don't want to jump into right now. But ABC on the day, was it on Sunday or was it Monday? No, it was Sunday. No, it wasn't. I can't even, God, I lost track of days. Anyway, when this Russian propaganda thing came out that listed us on their website, the following day, ABC posted an article basically saying the same exact thing Washington Post did, that fake news is backed by Russian propagandists. 2 hours later, ABC News posted a fake news story about how CNN aired 30 minutes of porn, and it was a fake story. But it didn't matter because ABC covered it anyway. And then they changed the after it was outed as a fake story, ABC News changed the content of the article. They changed their title. and they changed everything about their article, and they didn't even issue a retraction. They didn't issue a correction. They didn't issue an update. They didn't say, oops, we messed up, fake news, sorry, guys. They didn't do any of that. But 2 hours before they posted that fake news story, they said fake news was funded by Russian propaganda. Just can't make this stuff up. And then another story today over on the Free Thought Project, because, you know, this fake news thing has been the narrative of the month. And everybody's like, oh, fake news cost Hillary the election. Fake news is undermining our democracy. Fake news is this and fake news is that. Well, guess what? Again, today, fake news, Washington Post, social videos show police response to active shooter at Ohio State. ABC News, one suspect dead after active shooter reported at OSU. USA Today, Ohio State seen secure after reports of active shooter. Los Angeles Times, Raw, active shooter at Ohio State University. Well, the only problem is there wasn't an active shooter at Ohio State today. There was an active knifer. First of all, that doesn't fit into the mold of the typical propaganda because, you know, the liberal media always goes after the guns. Whenever something bad happens and someone gets shot, it's like, the guns, the guns, the guns, we got to take the guns, the guns are bad, the guns are bad. The right-wing media, whenever someone gets shot, like, was it a Muslim? Because if it was a Muslim, we got to ban Muslims. Well, they got it wrong today because it was a knife attack. Everybody, you know, Washington Post, everybody else said it was a gun shooting. I mean, this is basically like inciting a riot, in my opinion. You know, like they said, you know, like the old saying, well, you can't yell fire in a crowded in a crowded theater or whatever because it'll, you know, everyone will start running out and people get trampled. Well, you don't say there's a shooting going on when there's not a shooting going on either. That's what Washington Post did. I mean, this is ridiculous. Ridiculous. And at the same time, they're sitting here saying, fake news has to be dealt with, guys. We got to, you know, Facebook and Google and Twitter, they got to censor that stuff. We can't let them just have fake news going out everywhere. Well, let's take Washington Post off of Facebook. Take them off. Wait, I agree. Take them off.
It's the mainstream corporate media makes fake news all the time. That's their business. That's how they make money. They're losing money, obviously, but that's all they do. They have no business. They are government propaganda. They are disinformation, and they are fake news. And so, because they are doing it, and they don't want to admit as much, and they don't want to admit their part in this crazy freaking election, they are pointing the fingers at everybody else who had the integrity to point out the crap, to point out the bullshit, and to call it for what it was, and to point out the corruption, and to actually point out the truth and the facts and the reality of the matter. Like, they can't handle that actual journalists are doing the job that they once did. And so they have to blame everybody else for it. And it actually produces rather comical results. Like, when you're talking about this, I'm sitting over here laughing my ass off because it's absurd.
And over the weekend, again, they got caught in another bullshit story where they said that the guy that founded Corona died and left everyone in his home, in his village that he was born in, $1 million, and they all became millionaires in this village. Bullshit, false story, fake news. Everybody fell for it in the mainstream. They all reported it. But you know what pisses me off the most? When we mess up, at least here on the anti-media, I guarantee you, whenever we mess up, and we mess up occasionally, we fact-check everything, we make sure every story is legit. In fact, we refuse as much as we can to not source state-run media, including like RT and Sputnik and God, what's that Iranian news outlet that everyone likes to cover now?
Press TV.
We don't even cite government-backed media. But if in the rare occasion that we fuck up, we'll post it right there in the article, and it'll tell you right there, update, we initially posted this, but it turns out that we were wrong, and this is actually what happened. Sorry about that.
You know, that's actually true. That is actually true about Free Thought Project does that too, and the alternative media outlets that I actually trust, that I trust more than anything else, all do that. They won't alter their articles. They'll post an update and say, we adjusted this article because this information became available and we were incorrect.
And this happened widespread with the CNN porn story, is that these assholes that literally are coming around saying, oh, fake news is the scourge of the earth, we need to ban it, and they went around posting fake news themselves. They rewrote their articles, they rewrote their headlines, and or they pulled down the articles entirely without as much as an apology, without even a retraction, without an update. The only way you could actually see these articles and the real headlines that they initially had was by looking on social media and seeing people who had shared that shit when it was going viral, when they had these clickbait headlines on fake news. You could see the screenshots of like the initial titles, and then you click on the link, and then it's like a whole different story. It's like whole different story, and like there's no update, there's no note at the bottom that says, "Oops, we messed up on this one. Here's the real story." Nothing. I just rewrote it. Ridiculous. Pisses me off. Anyway, enough of that stuff. Everybody, don't go to Washington Post. Don't go to Proper Not because it's garbage. There's no evidence. It's just rhetoric. Bunch of bullshit graphs that really aren't substantiated. Glenn Greenwald, who I'd argue is probably the most renowned journalist of our day. He's the guy responsible for breaking the Edward Snowden story and has been probably the most brilliant journalist of our generation. You know, of course, that'll be argued. But in my opinion, he has come to our defense in a huge takedown of Washington Post. Go look at that. Don't go to Washington Post. Go to The Intercept and look at what he wrote because it's amazing. The shit on The Washington Post is just stuff. It's just words. It's no evidence, no citations. The only citation is anonymous neoconservatives that won't refuse to have their name listed because, I don't know, they don't want us to know who they're connected to, I guess. But anyway, enough of that. Let's move on to the big story here. Dakota Access Pipeline. Claire, I know you've been wanting to talk about this. What is going on there? I mean, there's a bunch of different things going on. I mean, the veterans are heading up there, 2,000 strong. They've raised $500,000 in a matter of days. Huge outpouring of support. The governor just issued a order to that they were going to start trying to shut down the camps. The Army Corps of Engineers are planning on shutting it down on the 5th. The veterans arrived the day before. I mean, we're looking at an epic, epic showdown of just proportions that we haven't seen in modern protest movements, I don't think. I mean, the Occupy movement,
no,
a little different. This is something huge, and it's going to really establish what's going, you know, this is 2017 is being made, like, right now, in the next coming days. Like, 2017 is going to be made. What do you think is going to happen?
This is a confluence of a number of things. It's really important to understand that the Standing Rock Sioux tribe stands on treaties that were made in 1851 and 1868 that delineated the land for Native Americans alone, not to be infringed upon except for a railroad going through and a few other considerations that were very minor. But other than that, it was supposed to be Native territory. So it's all based on that. But besides that, because obviously the U.S. government ignored those treaties and has trampled all over them. People are protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline because it will go underneath the Lake Oahe reservoir of the Missouri River. And the company responsible, First Energy Transfer Partners, has a terrible record, but it was recently bought by Sunoco, which has an even more terrible record of at least 200 reported spills in the past 6 years. It's very possible that if this pipeline goes under the river, that the Missouri will be contaminated very quickly. It is the drinking water source for both the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and 18 million people downstream, at least. So we have all these things going on. They're standing to stop the pipeline, and there has been so much police brutality, just inordinate lies by the Morton County Sheriff's Department, which is controlling all of the police and law enforcement on the scene, which are now from 9 states and encompassing at least 1,300 officers. There was an order issued on Friday, all of a sudden, much to the surprise of both the Standing Rock Sioux and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes, that there would be an eviction, a closing to public access of the area north of the Cannonball River, which would encompass the Ochetti Echoing camp, which is the main camp, and I believe one or two more camps. That's huge because that's where most of the protests, most of the opposition to the pipeline is going on. There was nothing in the letter from the Army Corps of Engineers delineating how this eviction of all of these people would happen. There are now at least 7,000 people in those camps, from what I hear, plus we have a delegation of no less than 2,000 veterans coming into that area. I mean, this is a very large movement against this pipeline. If there is force to be used, which the Army Corps' letter was updated and said, no, this is not going to be a forcible eviction. We're just going to stop providing emergency services. But they didn't delineate what their plan is, and it's pretty clear that there could be force used. If this goes ahead, there is obviously going to be a massive conflict. There have been so many actions by police that are so brutal that we have international human rights organizations coming to observe and have observed human rights abuses and have called on the White House to investigate, and, you know, have, obviously it's fallen on deaf ears. Today there is a winter storm taking place. It's supposed to dump like maybe a foot of snow on the camps, and using that excuse, the North Dakota governor issued an emergency and mandatory evacuation order. There is some debate over who has control of that land because it's federally managed by the Army Corps of Engineers, but the North Dakota governor is dictating what's going on. Most people believe that the Army Corps has precedence, so it won't be until December 5th for its order to take place for people to be evicted, but there is debate. Nonetheless, all of these people that are in camps trying to oppose this pipeline face either, you know, ticketing, like citation, they face possible arrest, they face possible forcible eviction from this land just for opposing this pipeline. It's kind of up in the air what's actually going to happen, because for one thing, the Army Corps of Engineers has not delineated what its plan is for evicting these people. They have said, well, everybody is going to be subject to citation, but to imagine a plan where, say, 8,000 people face a citation each for transgressions is quite the monumental chore. They're using the excuse of the winter weather as being dangerous to people encamped there, as if their structures are not strong enough. And yet on November 20th, last Sunday, the police sprayed for over 6 hours water and tear gas on a bunch of protesters, blew up one woman's arm, threw a tear gas canister in another's eye. It is not the safety of the protesters that's in question here.
Keep people warm. They sprayed them with water and sub-freezing temperatures to keep them.
It was 23 degrees outside, and they sprayed them with water. This is a vision. You cannot conjure a more blatant specter of the 1960s Black civil rights movement with fire hoses on protesters than you can of that moment last week.
I mean, I don't want to compare too much to the civil rights movement as far as making light of the situation, but in some ways this is worse, because it's one thing they get sprayed with a hose when it's 80 degrees out, and, you know, brutal, you know, water cannon is really bad. But to be sprayed with water when it's sub-freezing, I mean, your clothes start freezing, your breath starts freezing, you start having sheets of ice dripping off of you at that point.
There were activists on the scene who reported that it took probably less than a minute for their clothes to freeze to their bodies. Medics on the scene reported that there were dozens. They lost count of how many people had hypothermia. There are reports that at least 26 people had to be transported to the hospital. A tribal elder went into cardiac arrest twice. There were people. Police, according to medics, and not just tribal medics, but medics from the city of Bismarck, were reporting that police were pointing out and targeting and shooting people in the head and in the legs with rubber bullets and with, you know, tear gas canisters and concussion grenades and everything else. and the police, the Morton County Sheriff's led police on the scene justify it as a riot. And I'm sorry, but the only people who were affecting a riot in that moment were the police themselves. That was a no less than six hour assault by police on people who had done nothing wrong. The only thing that was aimed back at police were water bottles and maybe a couple of like rocks or something like that. But that is in defense of being assaulted with a deadly threat. When you spray water on people in 20 degree weather, you are presenting a deadly threat to life. There is no excuse for that. There is no justification for that. And afterwards, the sheriff not only justified it, but said, hey, it was effective. We'll do it again.
Yeah, and you know what? The Morton County Sheriff's Department is so despicable, so ridiculous. I mean, they have no credibility left. They've falsely reported. I don't want to go too high on my speculation, but I know of at least 5 reports that have come out where they're like, oh, we caught these protesters with a gun, and one protester shot another protester, and the protesters had improvised explosive devices, and they were trying to bomb us with propane tanks. Every single one of the reports has been found false. Every single one. The time
the
when
biggest...
said was when they said someone got shot, it was a contractor with the Dakota Access Pipeline that tried to infiltrate the camp and came out rocking an AR-15, and then he was peacefully disarmed and detained by the tribal police.
Yeah, and incidentally, that man, Kyle Thompson, his father is he's an Indigenous American, but he is a big oil proponent and has tried to do oil for profit for a very long time. Not only that, but the police have denied using concussion grenades. They're saying that like they did not use weapons that could possibly have destroyed the one young woman, Sophia Walensky's, arm. They're saying they did not do that, but there were independent journalists from Unicorn Ride on the scene who actually picked up pieces from grenades that said Stinger. And if you went to the site and looked up Stinger, that grenade is described as containing like innumerable rubber pellets with a blast radius of 50 feet. Now, witnesses on the scene said that something hit her directly and exploded right on her arm. If it has a blast radius of 50 feet and contains rubber pellets, yeah, that could most definitely destroy somebody's arm, if not their entire life. So the sheriffs have been exposed for lying I don't even know how many times. Medics on the scene said that it looked as if they had a new arsenal at their disposal and were unleashing it on the crowd as if they were experimenting. That is disgusting. And it is deplorable. And the thing that is the worst about all of this, no matter how you feel about this pipeline, is that this brutality is not being addressed by the White House, by the Obama administration, by anybody in power, by anybody in Congress, or anybody of any authority whatsoever. This is happening on our soil, in this country, and it's like everybody is turning a blind eye, and it's absolutely deplorable.
Where's the Washington Post? Where's ABC? Where's CBS? Where's Fox News? Where's MSNBC? I mean, every article I've seen from the mainstream, and this is something I reported on just last week, every article I've seen is, oh, protesters and police face off at the Dakota Access Pipeline. Here's a statement from the Sheriff's Department that is found to be completely lying every single time they've ever made a statement. Here's another statement from them, even though they lie every time.
That's the thing. They're saying as if there's some contest, like it's a face-off between protesters and police or water protectors and police. It's never a face-off. If you actually go back and look at the video that journalists and that witnesses and the people have taken from the scene, it's never aggression on the side of the people opposing the pipeline. It's police arbitrarily escalating the scene. And case in point, the McKenzie County Sheriff, the North Dakota McKenzie County Sheriff, has been removed from office, or at least suspended, because he was employing military-style tactics that were absolutely unacceptable, and he was trying to train his people as if these protesters, these water protectors, were the enemy. He's been removed from office now. I mean, I don't understand why the Morton County Sheriff has not been, but the McKenzie Sheriff has been. That is really telling of what's actually going on. I mean, this is a deplorable amount of force used against people who are not really doing anything. And people have said that these protesters are like, they're creating violence, you know, they're throwing things at police or they're destroying property. And that's absolutely not true. And people on the scene, independent journalists, for one, have collected evidence on video and, you know, pictures and such that evidence the presence of agitators and infiltrators and everything else. The camp even has in its rules, be careful who you talk to, because there are a number of infiltrators from the pipeline company and from law enforcement who are trying to garner information and trying to upset this movement to make it look bad.
And they're trying to incite violence, too. I mean,
exactly.
To me, is very reminiscent of what's going on in Israel, Palestine. I mean, you know, the Israelis claim self-defense when they've got a tank rolling through a Palestinian neighborhood and kids throw rocks at the tanks that are occupying their neighborhood, and they say, oh, well, we're just retaliating out of self-defense. I mean,
we fear for our lives.
Throwing rocks at our tanks, I mean, that's, you know, a death sentence, right? That's exactly what's going on. I mean, you've got literally MRAPs, which are basically street-ready tanks, occupying land, which is Native American land, that I don't care what the current people say, oh, well, the lines are drawn right here. I don't give a shit about that. The lines should be drawn where the treaties say they should be drawn. First of all, I mean, the U.S. government is occupying Native American land everywhere in this country. The entire country is Native American land. We're lucky that the government is lucky that they've basically said, okay, well, we'll take the land that you guys promised to us in our treaties that we all signed upon. But the government won't even honor those treaties. All of that land right there where they're protesting, where the pipeline is supposed to go, that is Native American land that was promised to them in treaties in the 1800s that has falsely been occupied, illegally been occupied ever since. And that land is rightly theirs. And there's no argument to be made that, oh, well, property rights and the pipeline secured that land legitimately. No, they didn't. That's Native American land. And the rest of the pipeline route, especially the route through Iowa, they didn't secure that land legitimately either. They used eminent domain. They said, oh, you farmers in Iowa that grow our corn, you don't want to let us run a pipeline through your land? Well, too bad. The government's going to come take your land from you, and you're going to take what we give you. That's exactly what happened throughout the entire route of that pipeline. Not legitimate at all. There's no property rights for that pipeline company. They don't own that land. They stole that land. They bought some of it legitimately, one could argue, but a lot of it has been stolen. No property rights for stolen land. None. That argument, it needs to be thrown out, because people say, give me that shit online, and I unload on them because it's bogus. It's bullshit.
Over and above everything else, DAPL is totally indicative of why there should never be something such as a billionaire. Way too much power for these total weirdos to just go out in the world and ruin it.
Yeah, dude.
It needs to be said, though, too. This is the most imperative point to be made, actually. Everybody needs to understand this. Okay, I did a very in-depth investigation into how Dakota Access came into existence, and there were politicians and payoffs and et cetera, obviously, behind the scenes. But the biggest part of that, of all of this manipulation, was that the law was changed literally for Dakota Access, and it was stuck into that contentious omnibus spending bill, I think it was last year. There was a ban in place since the 1970s on the export of crude oil, unrefined oil. That was repealed in this omnibus bill, not with debate as its own piece of legislation. It was repealed as part of this omnibus bill. What that means is that this Dakota Access fight is going to be repeated ad infinitum everywhere in the country. All, like, for the rest of time, because this pipeline was allowed to go through, because that piece of legislation was stuck into the omnibus bill. That is huge. We have been allowed to export refined crude and fracked oil and, you know, various other big oil interests for a very long time. But unrefined crude was off limits for decades. And now suddenly it's not. And if you look, you can see how Dakota Access mimics Keystone. It's basically Keystone squared. It's the rerouting of the Keystone XL pipeline that was turned down by Obama. And we have the same company, Energy Transfer Partners, doing the same thing in Texas, using eminent domain to make a pipeline there. And there are other locations across the country. And even further, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in Canada is working in the same interest. And there are pipelines going from Canada and their whole tar sands oil down into the U.S. They are doing the same damn thing. This is not going to stop. The APL has unleashed an absolute monster. And it's not going to stop. And this battle is, like, completely justified. And it's absolutely horrific. But it's only going to get worse. And people need to realize that it's not just one battle. This battle means the world, but there are going to be so many more after this.
I didn't even know that, you know. And we've been talking about, DB has been bringing up about how a lot of this oil is going to be exported and probably to China and stuff. Because yeah,
it's 100% export. DAPL presented this as being something to help solve America's energy dependence on foreign nations. It's complete bullshit. 100% of the oil that is fracked and going to be transferred down this pipeline is going to be exported for profit for a private company.
Oh, man. Ridiculous. Just ridiculous what's going on. And, you know, the woman, Sophia Wolanski, who had her arm blown up, and then, you know, the 13-year-old girl who's shot in the face with the rubber bullet and has what seems to be like permanent damage to her eye. I mean, these people have become unwitting martyrs in this movement. But, you know, her dad kind of gave this, he's given a couple of press conferences and interviews now. And I know in the first interview he gave, which with someone who seemed like maybe one of Sophia's friends or something, recorded it on their phone and posted it online. But, you know, he breaks down in tears and he's like, you know what, like, this is like something that would be happening maybe in like a war zone. And, you know, you'd think maybe if my daughter had signed up for the army and was in Iraq or Afghanistan, you know, maybe something like a grenade blowing her arm up would be maybe not that surprising. But this is happening right here in the United States. And really, this is just the big time showcase. And finally, the public getting to know about the extent of police militarization in the United States. And what they're doing is just the work of an army.
And it's comforting to see all the bootlickers coming out of the woodworks. It's nice to know we're going to have a lot of cannon fodder coming up.
Oh, man. Yeah, dude. I mean, it's on full display. Fascism is in America. It's not Donald Trump that's going to bring it here. I'm not going to say he's not going to make it worse. He will. But it's already here. It's been here for a while. I mean, if you didn't realize it in Ferguson, if you didn't realize it during the Occupy movement, if you didn't realize it in the Baltimore riots or in the Eric Garner case, now everybody, no more excuses. Militarization is here. Fascism is here in the United States. Are you going to stop it and oppose it, or are you going to sit back on the sidelines and just let it happen? You're going to have a lot of frustration. Radio. Be around, but everyone else will.
I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.